Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the launch of our podcast on the Without Your Head Network. I am Sophia Cassiola.
And I am Michael J. Epstein. And we are very lucky here to have our good friend Izzy Lee with us.
Hello.
I should add that we also, right here on our couch next to us, is our third usually silent member of the podcast, King Ghidorah the dog. He, you'll hear his pitter-patters, sometimes his...
He's been very energetic this week, let's say.
Yeah, he's doing well,
He's been sleepy all night and then crazy all day, so... which is, I guess, is good.
Just like the rest of us.
Yeah, so...
So how are things on the east side?
Probably a little less weird than burning California, but they're okay. They're still strange in the darkest timeline imaginable, right?
Today's the first day I've really noticed, like, really smoke from the fires in L.A., so it's definitely hazy out there today.
Yeah, we don't quite have the red skies. I know there's like a lot of photos.
There's a haze
of the San Francisco area has movie red skies.
It's crazy.
Like terrifying. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, yeah. So we wanted to talk to you a bit this week because we had just finished watching films at the Fantasia International Film Festival. And actually, Horrible Imaginings as well. So we're trying to cover, you know, some of the films that we've seen at both, and we were excited to have films playing at both of those. So we talked a couple weeks ago to Jim McDonough, who directed Darling Pet Monkey, who worked with us, and that played at Fantasia. And then we had Seth Chatfield 2 weeks ago for Shiny Diamonds, which played at Horrible Imaginings. And we also were lucky to have worked on a film called Tea Time that played at Horrible Imaginings and is currently available on newenglandfilm.com as part of their online film festival. So you can watch that right now.
Temporarily.
Tea Time. It's a very cute movie about a terrifying child. We believe that, I think you maybe, Izzy, you would agree that children are terrifying.
Especially blonde children. Like little blonde girls are the most terrifying.
I agree. I used to be one.
Yeah. Right? Like me too. So we know.
As I'm sitting in conversation with two formerly young blonde girls, I'm terrified myself.
So. I will eat you.
Yeah. But Tea Time is very cute. It's a terrifying 3-year-old girl who murders her
toys. Who are people? Who are toys?
I've seen it. That little girl is great.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the things that we have been seeing at Fantasia. I don't know if do you want to start? We usually start, but you know what? I feel like we could go crazy and let you just bring up some movies.
I can also go crazy.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of things as well.
Yes.
I'm going to give shout out first and foremost to, my wonderful friend Bria Grant, who had two films playing in the festival, both of which she wrote. Let's start with 12 Hour Shift, cool. Which she also directed. And that was awesome. That was with David Arquette and, oh my God, the amazing woman from May.
Yeah.
Angela Bettis.
Angela Bettis.
Yeah. That was so funny. It was really great. I showed my mom the trailer for it yesterday and she used to be a nurse. So she's really excited to see that.
Yeah, it has some fun, like, off-kilter humor. I'm a big fan of the movie After Hours, and I love the kind of, like, weird characters who are kind of realistic, but also kind of, like, there's something just not right about them, and I feel like that movie captured some of that kind of stuff.
Totally agree. And then there's Lucky, which was written by Bria, and she starred in it, and that was directed by Natasha Carmani, who also did Imitation Girl. And that was awesome. Did you guys see that?
I did, yeah.
I missed it.
Sophia missed it. Yeah. I really like Lucky a lot. Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about it.
It was a fun... I mean, I don't know if you want to describe it without being too spoiled. It's hard to really spoil anyway, I feel
A-cab?
Like.
Is that like the...
No. It's okay. kind of this woman who keeps experiencing like break-ins to her house every night. And there's like a guy trying to kill her. But it's the police don't really care or do anything, and like her husband is kind of absent, I guess, throughout. And I mean, it's very highly metaphorical and not really a literal film at all. So I think, but that was really fun. Yeah. So what did you think of it? You enjoyed it a lot.
I thought it was fantastic, and I was sort of really. Well, not upset, but like I was like, ah, damn it, because my short, My Monster has the exact same premise except has a different tone.
Right.
And it also stars Bria, which is hilarious.
There's a monster. Yeah.
There's a monster coming to her window every night, and her, you know, Adam Egypt Mortimer, who plays her partner, doesn't believe her, and, you know.
Right. It has kind of
so weird.
Almost like an opposite ending.
Right?
Yeah. I hadn't considered that before, but you're totally right. It makes sense. That's really interesting.
And for anyone listening, you can see that on Alter's YouTube channel.
Cool. Yeah, definitely check out My Monster, a really fun movie. And I'll link that. If you go to our blog post about this, I'll link everything that we talk about.
Oh, sweet.
Well, so.
Yeah, but I thought Lucky was incredibly well directed. There's a lot of work with colors. Like Bria's character was in blue all the time. She was around blue. So that signified, you know, her icy demeanor, I would say. A lot of diversity in that film, both on crew and on camera, and I thought that was really important. I interviewed Natasha about that as well, in addition to other questions for Screen Anarchy, and she was thrilled to be able to talk about that, and I can send you those links too.
Yeah,
I also
absolutely.
Bria. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's something I always say is, like, if you hire a woman director, then, like, diversity just trickles down into the rest of the crew. Like,
exactly.
They won't hire 99% men.
99% white guys, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's always exciting. I'm like, if you want a diverse crew, get a female director.
And that movie definitely is very cool because it's has a perspective that's just not really been represented very many times in film. Like, it's a type of story and a type of perspective that we don't see very often. So I thought that was a really fun way to portray that. And it's really, I mean, my again, without spoiling too much, my sense of it is it's like just really about the universal experience of women and being gaslighted and such. So yeah, it's a cool movie. Yeah, I dug that one a lot. And I like Imitation Girl as well, so I was excited to see her follow-up. And I like, you know, I think Sophia and I, at least, we're very into movies that are not just, like, literal depictions of events. So that's a very abstracted, kind of metaphorical structure in terms of what the plot is or what the storytelling is, and I think that's really cool. I'm into
totally agree.
Yeah.
Did you guys get to see Morgana?
We did, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did, yeah.
What did you think of that?
It's really, again, it's really nice to see the story, the perspective from somebody you don't normally see.
Yeah. But it was awesome because it's an older woman who gets into porn and kind of has her own reawakening through that. And I, you know, so that's a great feel good story, I'd say.
I don't know if it's feel good, though.
It goes some places that are less feel good, but like the initial, you know, finding her own sexuality at later age.
Well, one of the things that moved me the most about that doc was that she was planning on ending her life because she had a terrible marriage and she just had nothing that she felt going for her to look forward to. And she had hired an escort, basically like one last hurrah before she's going to end her life. And then that experience had changed her and she wanted to do it again because it felt so good to just feel someone's physical touch, and my God, it moved me to tears, you know, the transformation that she went through after that. So highly recommended.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Is that really, you know, if that's coming sweet. Out sometime soon or?
I heard a rumor that it's going to be released maybe in October.
Okay, cool.
But I don't know for sure yet.
Yeah. A lot of these films that we're talking about, for you know, unfortunately
available.
For everybody listening, they're not available yet. But you know, we're giving you kind of previews of films that are coming out. I know, I think Lucky and 12 Hour Shift are coming out in the next couple months. I think I read.
Yeah.
So those will be out soon, and so all these films will be out, you know, within the next probably 6 months or year at the most. But yeah.
Another doc was Class Action Park, which was already available on HBO Max.
Yes.
Which was totally insane. You want to tell us about it?
No, you go ahead. Darling Pet Monkey. So our film Darling Pet Monkey played before that at Fantasia, which was cool. That was great to be
amazing.
Paired with that. Yeah, yeah. No, go for it.
Okay, so this amusement park for, I'm going to say rubes, was started by a guy that got kicked off Wall Street for selling worthless penny stocks. And his idea of a good time was to create this amusement park designed by his own drawings on napkins, as well as rejects from like legit, you know, engineer departments of other amusement parks, like, you know, Six Flags or Disney. And as you can guess, it was kind of a fucking disaster, but very popular because a lot of simple people have apparent death wishes and would brag about how they got, you know, cut, scarred, maimed, and otherwise, you know, injured. And we're talking like they had go-karts that you could drive across the goddamn freeway. They had
I don't think you were supposed to do that. But
no, I don't think you're supposed to do that, but people did it.
Yeah.
There were actual speedboats that weren't, you know, amusement park grade, and so you could jump a fucking pier and land on top of another one. There was a story about that. There's, you know, the rides were tested by their teenage employees who were also, Jesus, rampant, partying, doing drugs, having sex, whatever, probably also conceiving children. but, you know, they would test the rides and lose teeth, which is, yeah. Jesus, that's
my favorite awful. Section of the film was when they were talking about the loop. It was a water park primarily, or a section of it anyway. And they had this like water slide that was a loop. That was the vision of it. And so they paid like employees. They're like, we'll give you $100 if you try this out. Like you might, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. But I think there's like less liability for employees than if you brought somebody in from outside somehow. I don't know. That's what they talked
they
a little bit about.
They had workman's comp insurance and not other insurance.
Yeah, so they sent employees through this and like they all got hurt and they kept, you know, redesigning it. And at one point, I guess, like people kept coming through and being cut. And they couldn't figure out why. And so they went in and opened it up and looked, and there were apparently teeth from somebody who had formerly gone through embedded in the wall of it that were like slicing people open.
Oh my God. Weird. Can you fucking imagine?
Yeah. So
madness.
I remember growing up seeing the commercials. I grew up in Long Island, which is, you know, was sort of maybe an hour and a half from where Action Park was. So they had commercials where we were. Even at that time, we were like told, this is not a place that you're allowed to go or can go. Like, it's way too... Everybody kind of knew at the time that it was like not a good idea to go there, but...
But it happened anyway.
Happened anyway. God. So yeah, if you want to watch a terrifying story of people being injured and killed at an amusement park, there you go.
I think that's a good segue into Jumbo. Did you see Jumbo?
I saw that at a different film festival. I might have been Chattanooga.
Oh yeah, I think it did play at Chattanooga because I missed it. I missed it there.
It's the actress from
Portrait of a Lady on Fire,
which I loved last year. It's a great film. I liked Jumbo. I'm not sure about it, but she falls in love with a amusement park ride and has like this weird sexual relationship with the amusement park ride. And it's pretty cool. A lot of cool visuals, like the lights on the ride and stuff was really awesome. And just like a weird coming of age story for this girl.
Yeah, definitely like a metaphor about socially maligned relationships or types of love. I mean, definitely like, you know, homosexuality is a clear subtext of the thing and exploring that and how the family responds to that and everything. I mean, I thought it was a really cool movie.
It was cool. It was just, I just don't know how I felt about it in the end, but yeah, I liked it.
Yeah. It was almost like a highly conventional love story movie, coming of age love story movie, but they just happened to make it about an amusement park, right?
Right. Which is pretty fun. And there's some cool sequences with that too.
I don't know if you enjoyed this or thought it was.
it was not for me.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people loved it. And I thought it was, you know, visually beautiful. And I like the overall message, but there's a lot of things in there that are problematic, I think. Mm-hmm. But that's just my opinion.
You know? I feel you. I didn't love it. I thought it was all right. But it was interesting, and I liked a lot of the cinematography. So
it stuck with us.
It definitely will stick with you. Yeah. But definitely go see Portrait of a Lady on Fire. That's my review of Jumbo.
Did you guys end up seeing Merry-Go-Round?
No.
We didn't, actually. And I know that won, I think, best like audience or something.
Yeah, something like that. I'm not sure what the prize was, but is the production design and the coloring so damn gorgeous. But it's also, you know, again, about a different perspective. An older woman, she's like, I don't know, maybe 50 or something. She's going through menopause and she gets on these hormonal replacement patches. And she doesn't use them correctly, and so her world starts to go a little crazy. Like, she's, like, crazy religious, and so, like, Jesus ends up watching her from, like, the wall, when she's in a bathtub, which is creepy as hell.
Yeah.
You know, she also gets really turned on and she starts having the time of her life. But then she attacks like this guy who gave her a scarf that works in a local, you know, women's fashion shop. And it gets really strange. And basically it's an older woman discovering herself and how she can actually be independent from people and how she doesn't maybe, you know, need a man or need religion in her life to live a good life. And so I thought that was a really great portrayal of someone like that. So I really enjoyed it.
Very cool. Yeah, it was on our list to see. And one of the things about Fantasia was you had to like watch movies exactly at the time that they were mm-hmm. playing. So some things just kind of like slipped through our fingers in that way.
Yeah, especially with the time difference. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But cool. I hear you. Cool. What else did you see that...
Did you check out Senzaru?
I did. Yeah, I saw that. You didn't see that, but Sophia didn't see that. Yeah.
What'd you think?
I thought it wasn't perfect, but I did like it. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, sometimes, it had an interesting cultural, I mean, it had the lead is like this Filipino woman, some of the movies in like Tagalog, and she's a caretaker for an older woman who's kind of, I guess she's infirm. I guess you would say she's infirm. Mm-hmm. Is that what would you, yeah. So
yeah, she's got bed sores.
She can't really get around on her own or do anything on her own. And so this Filipino woman is like the nurse caretaker. And it's about the two families and about like the secrets of the two families. And I felt like some of the handling of like what the actual secrets were was a little too like easy for me in terms of storytelling. Like it was a little too, like I've seen it too many times kind of thing.
Sounds like Cries and Whispers.
But I liked the performances and I liked the characters and I liked the ideas and I liked the manifestation of, I mean, I was saying we enjoy stuff that's not necessarily literal. So when there's like a manifestation of sort of a ghost that's the representation of their, you know, the past and the traumas and the other things that they're trying to deal with and find ways to, you know, put to rest. I thought that was cool. I thought that was
really, I'm totally obsessed with that cockatiel with like the bright light on his face. Yeah. And it's like the grandma from beyond or something giving him messages.
Yeah. That was cool.
That was, or her messages. Yeah, that was amazing. Yeah. I'm so obsessed with it. It's so cool.
Yeah, there was a lot of really good stuff in that movie. It was on my list to talk about. So I did like it enough to say, you know, to recommend it or whatever. Yeah, that was a cool one. Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, one of the things that's always fun about film festivals, if for people who haven't really attended film festivals, is that you see stuff that is a little more challenging and that you probably wouldn't, for us at least, we wouldn't necessarily like flipping through. That's a movie I probably wouldn't put on, you know, just like flipping through the listings on Amazon or Shudder or whatever. But, mm-hmm. you know, I was like, okay, it's playing now. I'm going to sit down and watch it. And then I get a lot out of it by kind of forcing myself into watching something that is a little different from what I might watch or is a little more challenging than what I might watch. And so I dig that experience a lot. And we saw, you know, we saw probably 40 movies at Fantasia, and I might say I didn't really like 25 of them or, you know, even something, but that's okay. I mean, I think that's part of that experience. That's not a negative thing in a way. It's like, you know, there are 40 movies that are challenging in different ways. And so some of them are going to connect with some people and some are going to connect with others. And that's kind of the point of it, right? It's like not, you know, we're not watching Avengers movies or something. It's not like something that's made for everybody. Yeah.
Right.
And it's particularly in genre films that are also independent films. I mean, it's kind of the same thing for the most part, unless it's a studio movie. There's so many different stories so many different perspectives and it's just wonderful to see it. Although I was disappointed this year to see two Fantasia films that both featured killers stalking women. And that was just the movie. That was the entire plot. And it was just so done with those types of slash games.
Yeah. Haven't we had 50 years of that? Like, you gotta make it new.
Like, why do we still need that? Why do they still get funding? I don't know. It makes me crazy.
Yeah.
I think we might have skipped those mostly.
Yeah, maybe.
I can't remember what.
No, that's good. You were right, too.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, I think there were about 100 films there, 100 features there, and we saw maybe 40 or so. So, yeah, which was already a lot, a lot to watch.
Yeah, it is a lot, yeah.
What else stuck out for you?
I'm thinking about shorts, like the Small Gauge Trauma Program and the Born of Women program were fantastic.
Cool. Yeah, we missed both of those.
I wanted to see the Born of Women program so bad, and somehow I think it just played once, and I missed it. So
a lot of really wonderful stuff, and both of those blocks. Small Gauge Trauma had 3 USC films this year, which is insane, but here we are. And they're all really well made, so congrats. But it's always exciting to see the shorts blocks because, you know, those are brand new voices that we don't usually get to see for the same reasons that I love going to film festival. So I always love watching those. The Born of Women is always exciting because it's women from all over the globe. And there was one film, and it felt like a 70s Peckinpah film.
Oh, wow.
Cool. You know, there was like a bank robbery going down, and of course, it ends in tragedy and double crossing and whatnot. But at the same time, you're like, good for you. Right. You know? Yeah, it was great. Oh, the film is called Break Us.
Break Us. Cool.
I'll send you the reviews that I've written for those as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll definitely include that. Yeah, we saw tons of shorts at Horrible Imaginings. Because those were available like the whole week. Like you could watch them any time, you know, on your own schedule kind of. So we saw 100, we watched all, or I, at least
did.
I did.
I watched, was in and out.
I watched all 100 shorts that they had there. And there's, again, lots of cool stuff. And Miguel, who programs that, does a really nice job of ensuring that there are like diverse voices and diverse types of stories. And so you're not watching, because that can be a thing, like, you know, as we have, I think, already mentioned, but you can, you know, be seeing a block of films that are all kind of like the same perspective and it gets a little dull. Like we don't need to see 15 films that are men stalking women and killing them. Mm-hmm. It's not really interesting anymore, right? It's been done. We've seen it. Now, like, time for a new story. So Horrible Imaginings was great because of, you know,
curation.
The curation of it is really, really nicely done, and the Q&As are really nice to get some perspectives on like what the goals were with some of the films. And
I love that festival. Yeah. This is my first year in, I think, the last 6 that I haven't played it. Because I don't have a horror short this year.
Right, right.
So it bummed me out, but, you know, what are you going to do?
I'm sure you'll be back. I'm sure you'll be back soon enough, right?
Right.
Cool. We also saw a film called Schlaf, or Sleep.
I liked it a lot. It's a German film. Kind of like a family, I guess, yeah, like family secrets, like come back to haunt this mother and daughter. And it's all based around sleep and dreams.
Very, very surreal. And,
It really stuck with me, I have to say. The mother's like having visions of this German town, and they end up at this hotel that then, of course, they have a relation to the hotel.
A lot of people compared it to The Shining for that element because it's like ghosts in a hotel, but I wouldn't call it.
It was really pretty too, the shooting of it, and great location. But you know, there's like the old guard, and then there's like some younger people around that like are not about it. And so it was like an interesting generational thing, as well as like the family history of this mother and daughter in the relationship to the town, and then all this stuff happening in the dreams. So I really liked it.
Thematically kind of similar to Sanzaru, actually. You know, it's about like inherited guilt and trauma almost, you know, throughout generations of a family.
Yeah, but it was really, I liked it a lot.
It was cool. I mean, we love the surreal stuff and the metaphorical stuff. So that would definitely stuck out as a good one. I also really enjoyed The Oak Room. I think Sophia liked it less than I did, but I don't know if you saw that one.
I did see it. Yeah, I thought it's is a pretty good neo-noir. I thought the main bartender, you know, the older gentleman, not the younger kid that comes in, was fantastic. I thought he was a really great character actor.
Yeah. I really like both of them a lot. I thought it was a fun way to tell a story because it's, again, without spoiling too much, it's a guy kind of closing a bar and then this kid walks in and they have a history. They tell stories to each other and that sort of shapes how they're manipulating each other, and we get to, you know, a point where things aren't quite what they seem, you know. So neo-noir is a great way to put it, and it's like a layered, at one point I think we're like 2 layers of storytelling inside. It's like a story within a story. It's kind of a, you know, an interesting thing. And I have, Sophia and I got into, I don't want to say debate, that's a strong word to put it, but we have some questions about what things meant and whether the story is either like super tight and really cool, or they just, or like, were like lazy about...
like 3 loose threads that really bothered me. Yeah. And like, and things that I could have interpreted from it, but it took a lot of leaps for me to get there to something mm-hmm. cool that I'm like, so did they mean that? And they just left right. it out. Like, or, you know, because I feel like most moviegoers wouldn't make the leaps that I made, you know, on purpose. But I just sat there and thought about it. So I don't right. know that it was intended, the stuff that I thought was cool about it, or if they left like three giant loose threads that then would really bug me.
I had the same sort of question. Yeah, like the person when he called somebody that had a woman's name and he's like, this so-and-so will be here in an hour.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it was the same shot of the guy with the fancy shoes.
Right, right.
Who did
right.
not walk, you know, 3 miles in the snow.
Right, right.
Yeah. Everything about that character, I'm like, what?
Yeah, there are some questions, definitely. I my opinion is that probably there is a tight story there and we weren't quite given enough to do it. I wrote a review on Letterboxd where I'm like, can anybody tell me how this stuff interconnects? I'm hoping that somebody shows up. Yeah, I didn't message them or anything, but I'm hoping that somebody shows up and tells me like how the things interconnect. And I think once I find out, you know, what the intent was and if it's really there seated in the movie, then I will say I really love that movie. And if it's not there, then I'm mad.
You know, and I'm all for things being ambiguous. I love that. But it doesn't feel intentionally ambiguous. It just feels like mm-hmm. like there's just something kind of missing. And I don't need to be led to the water. You know, I definitely will put right. the work in. But so like that's what bothers me. Like if it was intended and it's not there, then they kind of failed at some point to put it in. You know,
yeah. I hear exactly what you're saying. I got the same impression. I loved the way it was shot.
Yeah, it was really
lovely cinematography.
Yeah, and it definitely felt like it was based on a play. And in fact, when I looked it up, it was based on a play. Like they just took a play and then yeah. did it. Which I'm a fan of that kind of thing. I think it's really interesting to see how super contained things can be, you know, brought into films, and it's really hard to do.
I'm being hypercritical because it was cool. But I was annoyed, but I didn't know it. Like I was saying, the certain threads didn't line up for me. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I think we tentatively recommend it, and maybe it's
certainly as a contained movie with like only three people just talking, it did really well with that because that's very hard to do, like a yeah. feature with just three people chatting. You
know? Right.
So that's cool. I really love Patrick. Did you see Patrick?
I saw Patrick last year at Fantastic Fest.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I did see on Letterboxd some friends of mine had liked it from there. It's Belgium, it's interesting. Right? Was it Belgium?
I believe so, yeah.
This guy is like the manager of the nudist camp that his father owns. And then his father dies. And then he loses his hammer. And the rest of the movie is him trying to find his hammer in the nudist camp with all, like, the nudist people. And, like, usually I hate father-son, like, relationship, like, things. But this is so metaphor-heavy. And the performance was really good. It turns out it's the guy, the hot boyfriend from Revenge. And he's very much not hot.
Wait, are you serious? That's the same guy?
Same yeah. guy, yeah. But, I mean, he was really ripped in Revenge.
Yeah.
And he's also nude in Revenge. And, you know, and so it's like kind of the quirkiness of this movie is like everybody's nude the whole time. And it's like, you know, you just get used to it. But it adds like this layer of surrealism to the film, I think. But yeah, so it's the same guy, which like blew my mind. I had to like, and it's like only like a year apart. So he gained a lot of weight or lost a lot of muscle in between.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Kevin Janssens is his name.
Okay. Yeah.
I thought he also starred in a different Fantasia film as well. Yeah. You know what it was? It was another Fantasia film. It's called Savage State.
Okay. Yeah.
It was a Western. I thought it was really interesting. So basically it stars a bunch of French people in the American Civil War era, and a family is trying to get back to France because some Yankees come in and shoot up their dance hall thing and someone gets killed. And so they hire this same actor, Kevin Janssens, who's like a mercenary. I wouldn't say it was entirely successful because there wasn't like one clear protagonist and it should have been the young girl. But it was interesting. It was really, really shot so well. And the costumes were so great. So I enjoyed those aspects of it. I think Westerns are really hard to pull off, especially periods, period dramas. You know, I had mixed feelings about it, but I liked it overall.
Yeah. We also saw Anything for Jackson. Did you see this movie?
Oh, yeah. That was great.
It was so bizarre. I did enjoy it a lot. I mean, it was interesting.
Elderly Satanist.
Elderly Satanist. No. It was like...
Oh, yeah. I did see this one.
Started out... What I liked about it is the tone started out like it was like almost like a comedy. It was like these bumbling... I don't know. You know, they're probably in their 70s or something. They're supposed to be, and they're trying to revive their grandson had been killed in a car accident, and they're trying to like find a baby to then bring his spirit back into the world. And like they're kind of bumbling. So like the premise is like that they don't really know anything about how to do this, but they become so obsessed with it, and like satanic ritual is the path to making that happen. But then it gets really dark. I mean, the movie, it's like, I thought it was funny for the first half hour. And then after that, it's just like really creepy and dark.
I fucking loved it. Those actors, they were so adorable. Oh my God. They're like the cute little old people. They're so sweet and nice and friendly. But then, they're kidnapping a woman and terrible things happen. And it does get so dark. It's wonderful. I loved it so much. It's so enjoyable.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Cute.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a fun one. And I think like an interesting mix of tones. Like I didn't quite know where it was going to go. And even the ending, I was not really sure what the hell the thing was going to do. And,
right.
but it came together. I thought it was cool.
Did you see Come True?
No.
Oh, it's really different. Canadian director, Canadian film, of course. And is really, it's about nightmares and like sleepwalking and a little bit of flatliner type stuff where there's the sleep study and there's a shadow man. There's a bunch of like shadow people and it gets pretty creepy. And this very actually alarmingly thin protagonist is trying to just get to sleep and really can't. So it was written by the director who had his own personal experiences with sleep paralysis and nightmares and apparently shadow man visits because Jesus Christ, but it comes through, you know, and he did all of the VFX for those nightmare visions as well. And it's just so bizarre. And it was interesting, you know, I felt that it was pretty original for the most part. And it really went in the end to a place like you would never expect. So I loved that.
Cool. Come True. Yeah, we'll have to check that out. We did also enjoy, there was a sci-fi movie called Lapsus. I don't know if you saw that. It's a very, what I would call a scrappy sci-fi movie. I don't know if Sophie wants to.
It's like a Black Mirror almost, where it's just like slightly in the future of like really examining like worker, like Uber type, you know, freelance people who like work for these corporations, like whatever. And so it's like running cabling for like this internet company basically, but like through the woods and stuff. And then they're competing with like machines that they're trying to get to do the work better. And so it's all like freelance of that. And then there's also, it gets into some conspiracy stuff where it never quite crossed the line for me of like being annoyed at like 5G is killing you. But like it had some of that with the new internet of the movie, where like the main guy's brother is like, has like this wasting disease.
But it was mostly a satire of the gig economy, basically.
Yeah, that was the word, the gig economy.
Right.
So in the end, it really just was about like workers' rights and how shitty this kind of gig economy is for everybody and how bad it is. So I liked it. It was very low budget feeling. Like they're mostly like just in the woods running these cables, but really good, you know.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's like one of those that's not... I would call it, you know, not a perfect movie, but it had really interesting ideas, and we ended up really liking it overall. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
So I saw that. I'm on the opposite side where like I wanted to really like it, but it was just, you know, a feature of a middle-aged guy complaining about how he can't use technology for the whole movie. And so that just, it wore on me, you know what I mean?
I could see that.
Yeah.
Like I understand it, but come on, just do something different.
Well, we can talk a little bit about Clapboard Jungle, which I think you show up in one spot.
I am in Clapboard Jungle. I'm in two spots, probably for like maybe 10 seconds running time.
But it was a really good 10 seconds. It was a really solid 10 seconds.
Oh, thank you. That interview was from 2016 in Mexico City at Morbido.
Wow.
Yeah, so Clapboard Jungle is kind of a story. It's a documentary about how filmmaking sucks. it's a bad idea to make movies. We talked to Neil about it. He had seen it and he was recommending it to us. And he's like, Michael always says making movies is a terrible idea. And I feel like this was like a 2-hour documentary basically just saying that over and over again, which I think is a fair, I found it a little bit traumatic to watch, honestly, but also it's good. I think it was insightful. I mean, I don't know if people who don't make movies are going to have any interest in watching this thing. It's kind of a niche thing, but it does give insight for people into like what the experience of like trying to find money and figure out how to like get your movie out there and how to accomplish anything in this crazy, weird, you know, money-driven art world. So I thought, you know, I enjoyed watching it, and I found it painful to watch as well. So if you like suffering and you want to hear about how filmmaking is terrible, Clapboard Jungle, solid look at that. we also watched some like repertory movies, I guess, that they had, because they had quite a few like Fantasia classics, I think they call it. It's like older films that are being re-released. And there was some interesting stuff. I don't know. Did you see Day of the Beast?
I did rewatch that. I first saw that, The Kendall, when it came out.
Okay.
Forever ago, like in the 90s.
Yeah,
man. I was so psyched to watch it again because I remember it being hilarious and it held up.
Yeah, we did enjoy it.
It did also, you mentioned After Hours before. It felt a little bit like After Hours, but with like a priest and a Satanist running around all night with like a TV televangelist. It was a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah, so that was that's a cool one. And so the premise is that a priest needs to sin so he can meet the devil to prevent the birth of the Antichrist, basically. He needs to like find the devil so that he can like interfere with
which
the birth.
He had done like some Bible math to find right. that it was going to happen on like New Year's Eve. And he had like an equation to find that.
So it's him like trying to sin and do as much bad stuff as he can.
But him sinning is like pushing over like a person like that's a statue in the street. Like, yeah. Or stealing like one guy's luggage. Like, it was hilarious.
It's a very goofy movie, but yeah. It was fun.
Like, you know, at first I thought it was like a 70s movie, but it was like a mid-90s movie. And it almost had like some 70s feel to it, even though it is from the 90s. But then it was also so 90s, so like, I don't know.
It was made in Spain, I believe.
Yeah.
Or was that a Spanish movie?
Yeah.
So that was cool. I also watched, I don't know if you're, have seen any of these, but I watched the two Coffin Joe movies that they had. Mm-hmm. And I had been familiar with Coffin Joe like as an entity, but I don't think I'd ever seen a Coffin Joe movie. And like, holy shit, that was like pretty repulsive stuff in a way. Have you seen any of the Coffin Joe stuff?
I saw one of them a really long time ago.
Yeah.
And I didn't have time to delve back into the, you know, the retro screenings.
Yeah, they had the first one. It was called At Midnight, I'll Take Your Soul. And that was the first appearance of him. And honestly, I thought it was a little dull. I mean, the premise is like super, it was made in, I think, 64 it came out. And it's like a super misogynistic, like sadistic character, which I guess is the point, but I don't know. I didn't really find a lot to connect with in it. But then they had The Strange World of Coffin Joe, which actually had nothing to do with Coffin Joe, except that he does like an intro and then it's an anthology of stories. But like, and that was late 60s, maybe 68 or something, but it involved like necrophilia and like really, really sadistic torture. And like, it was crazy. I mean, it was like stuff that if you know, people would complain about it now as being too mean and gross and like too like torture porny. And I was like, this is like late 60s. Wow. So anyway, I don't know that I recommend it, but it was interesting to see. I feel like Strange World of Coffin Joe was interesting to see, even if just as like a historical artifact of like, yeah, people were doing fucked up stuff, like even back in the 60s. So
yeah, you can always find it. Whenever anybody's like thinks that we're doing anything new or subversive, like you can always go back and find the cases where people were doing it in like the 20s and the 30s.
I also saw the Japanese film Hentai Kamen, which it had been recommended to me as being really funny. And the premise
is that like the weird superhero where he wears panties on his head.
He has to wear panties on his face.
I walked out.
It was I did not find it to be that amusing, but it's like a high school kid who has to be a like pervert in order to turn into a superhero, and he has to wear panties on his head. And then
that's so extremely Japanese.
Shoves people. He like fights with his like magic atomic crotch and like slams people's feet. It's very homophobic.
It was just so juvenile, and I just didn't like care to watch it. Yeah. I just went and did something else while you watched it.
So I wasn't too impressed. I did watch both. They had part one and part two. And
masochist.
Well, I had watched the first one, and I'm like, I didn't really like it. And then I'm like, maybe the second one is better. And I guess maybe it was better, but it still didn't do much for me. But it's, you know, classic, like you said, Japanese weirdness where it's like it's not even like as subversive as you would portray it as, yeah, I guess. I would say silly. It's just dumb.
It's like a 14-year-old boy wrote it.
Yeah.
And
people are just, I mean, basically it's like dudes are afraid to have their face shoved in his crotch, which I mean, I guess I don't want my face shoved in his crotch, but it's just had like a homophobic undertone. Like that was the
awesome.
The punishment. Yeah. So anyway, that was a thing. That was a thing that we've seen.
It got made.
So we saw a bunch of films at Horrible Imaginings as well. And there's one that I really love that I just wanted to talk about that I watched twice because I found it compelling enough. It was called Repossession, and it was a movie about... It's a movie from Singapore. Hmm. It's about a 50-year-old kind of upper middle class or like kind of upper class business guy who loses his job and then it can't really cope with telling his family because of like the cultural shame of admitting to it. And so that shame kind of manifests as visions and things from his past. Again, it's very similar themes to this and Zaru and Schlaf even. It's like the past history manifesting as like a physical thing. And in his case, he has like almost like sleep paralysis, nightmares and stuff as well. There's like a demon that comes as a result of the representation of that. People complain that it's not really that horror-y because it's more of almost like a drama about a guy who's just like makes bad decisions. I mean, you can relate, you know, it's not like he's just a jerk. He's like a guy who wants to do the right thing, but he just can't manage to tell his wife or his daughter that he lost his job and that their lives are going to be affected by it. So he's basically, you know, he's responsible. He feels culturally responsible for taking mm-hmm. care of them. And even though they don't really, in a lot of ways they are,
well, let's they say, respond the positively that to it. They found out finally.
Yeah.
They both went out and got jobs.
Yeah.
You know? So like they didn't really care. You know, it wasn't like they were like,
right,
oh, fuck you, you don't support us anymore. They're like, okay, we'll pitch in.
But I think that was the point. Yeah. It's like the cultural
But it was shameful for him, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And they talked about that, like they had a Q&A where they talked a lot about how in Singapore, it's really, really prevalent that people are living above their means. I mean, even more than in the U.S., they were saying that it's like people, you know, really, really have like status fights, like cultural status requirements of having expensive cars and having expensive condos and things. And that those things become the reason for their lives or the value in their lives. And so they, you know, the director mentioned that everybody has to buy these like super expensive cars. So then if anything happens, if there's even like a scratch on the car, the people's like lives are ruined. Like it, you know, they freak out because that becomes the manifestation of all of the like value in their life.
Jesus.
So he's saying, so, you know, it's a very toxic culture associated with that. And so the movie, you know, they wanted to make a movie exploring that experience for like, especially an older person, you know, when you, an older guy in this context loses his job, it becomes harder because he's not like the hot young kid who's like gonna get hired. And there are even, you know, there are scenes where he's getting hired for a new job and the young people are like mad that you're too old. Like we should be letting new young people like take over and whatever. And so it's like really about the culture of, you know, what unemployment means as you, are not like coming out of college anymore. And
wow, that's so shitty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a rough, it's, I mean, it's a very depressing movie for sure. But I really loved it. I thought it was really well done. And I ended up watching it twice to fill in some of the gaps that I had in understanding some of the, I still have one question. I'm gonna have to write an email to the director to ask him one question about like whether I'm supposed to take something literally or kind of figuratively in the context of the movie. But yeah, I thought it was a cool one. And again, like, I think it's really fun to see, to me, like a very successful film takes universal ideas. Like we can all, I think we all at least have some ability to relate to that story. There's like elements of that story that are like almost anybody could relate to. But then it's so tied, and this was a discussion in the Horrible Imaginings like chat room at the time. Some people were saying like you had to be immersed in Asian culture and especially Singapore culture to really get the movie, you know, to really understand like what that shame is like. But I thought that was interesting to make a movie that's so tied to that specific culture, but then also has a really universal appeal because we all can relate to, you know, elements of that at least.
Right. I just think like any feeling we would have was just more extreme for him in his culture. But like even the director was talking about like the guy has like an Audi, and like an Audi there is like $200,000, like compared to like $60,000 here.
That's a house.
Yeah.
God damn. And why would you do that?
Right. And so like when he got lost his job, his like buddy was just like, sell your car and get like something cheaper, you know, and live off that money for a while. And like, you know, but it wasn't like... He didn't want to admit, you know, and didn't want to sell the car because that was admitting.
Right. And then everybody who sees him, you know, if they see him not with the Audi, right, then he doesn't look like the person that he feels he needs to portray outwardly.
He's not successful.
Yeah.
Right. So really, I feel like there's so many parallels here. This is Wall Street. This is Hollywood.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is for sure. Anywhere capitalism. Where status... Mm-hmm. Status and capitalism is everything. Yeah. It sucks.
Yeah.
Well, we even, again, in the chat talked about that, how it's basically like a capitalism demon. Like, it's like, it really is. It's like a representation of like what, like the shame of capitalism. And they tell a story in it. There's like a parable that's told within the context of the movie. Like he becomes like an Uber driver, and then one of his passengers tells him this parable about monsters. And it's a little like the scorpion and the frog, where it's like, what is the nature of a monster? And like, what is the nature? And it's real, to me, it was really a representation of like capitalism. And it's like, no matter what you think, like how you're going to beat this, capitalism is unfeeling and uncaring. It's just going to do what it's going to do. It doesn't like, just because you have a need or you're asking for mercy or anything like that, like it doesn't care. You know, like the company, I mean, it goes to the bank. There are a number of scenes involved with the bank, like trying to get an extra day on his loan and all that. And like, they just don't care. They're like, you know, they're like, no, that's the rules. Like there's no,
right.
You know, it sounds so simple. It's like, oh, I have the check right here. Can I pay this like tomorrow? You know, it's due today. And they're like, nope, we have to take it away. But that's like the idea, this demon of capitalism, that there's absolutely no empathy built into a system like that, right?
So it's, no, that sounds very, very much Drag Me to Hell in terms of, you know, somewhat premise-wise, you know.
So I really like that film anyway. So that's a cool one. I don't know when it will be available, but it will eventually get its release, I'm sure. And it was in English because in Singapore, they mostly, I guess at least half, or he was saying mostly, I think, speak English. And there's parts of it in Mandarin as well. And they use that for different types of cultural and class differentiations, I think. Like, so some of the, you know, the upper class people are more English speaking.
Right, and then, but his housekeeper speaks Mandarin.
So I think that's, you know, there's some interesting ideas there beyond just. So anyway, Repossession, I thought that was really, that was a fun one. Fun in quotes. So we're lucky enough again to have Izzy Lee here with us, and we have worked on I don't even know how many projects in some capacity with you at this point. You've been kind enough to let us tag along on so many things, and it's always been really fun. And I know you have a number of films that are currently at festivals and that are out, that are available for watching. And what's going on in your world in terms of the projects that you have?
Yeah, sure. So right now, the DC Shorts International Film Festival, which is I think it's kind of prestigious. I've never gotten in before. I got scouted for The Obliteration of the Chickens, which is insane to me. And that festival runs from today, September 10th, until the 23rd. And it's a whole bunch of international short films. There's, you know, experimental narrative, like what we did. There's docs, there's, I think, maybe animation. There's all sorts of different genres in there. So I'm interested to check it out because it is not a genre fest, which is odd for me.
Like, I think it's like a very prestigious fest, so it's really cool that you're part of that. And I think, like you're saying, you're going to be reaching an audience who why don't you say a little bit about what the movie is, I guess. I don't know if you want to reveal too much, but
yeah, sure. I mean, I just wrote something It's basically a weirdo manifesto, okay? Like, we live in an uncaring universe. The Abyss is stupid, though, and it's influenced by Werner Herzog especially, but also a little bit of Nietzsche in there, and it's narrated by my friend, author Bracken McLeod, who does a Herzog-type voice, over 100% stock footage, reflecting on the banality of existence, and it's just a fucking weird, funny, and truthful fever dream.
Yeah, and people, I know, like, when I've seen it with people, they've always responded very positively to it. It's always really fun for a movie like that to watch people experiencing it, because at first they're just like, what is this? What's going on? What am I doing? And then they start to get it, you know, like they start, because they're not sure. They're like, is this, can I laugh? Is this funny? Like, okay?
What's that filmmaker I always say it reminds me of, just did all like the escalators moving really fast and that style.
Well, you're talking about the Koyukatsu.
Yes, that's what it reminds me of, the style.
Yeah, really? I mean, it's a little bit like that, because it's just like slice of life looks.
Yeah, because it'd be like in the escalators, or then it's like the ocean moving really fast. And like, it's just like a 2-hour long thing of just like these images that like really affect you. But like, there's no real narrative to the images, really. Right.
It's just reflections. It's like visual art reflections.
It's experimental.
Yeah, it's basically like a museum piece, reflections on the world. And they're shot beautifully, like the Katsi movies, and Baraka, I think, was the last one that they did, which might have been like the cinematographer directed that one. I can't remember the people involved, but they're cool movies. It did, and it does have one in Baraka, I think, has a scene with like chickens on a conveyor belt having their beaks burned off and their toenails clipped. Which is really, because it just is happening, like, you know, because they do that to the, so that they can put them in factory farms. And it's just so, like, nonchalant. They're just, like, burning the beaks off, clipping the toes, you know. So in a way, like what Sophia's saying, when we were working on chickens, I was thinking about that moment in Baraka. I think it's Baraka that has that.
I'm not sure. I saw those movies so long ago. I think I just rented them from the library. And I was like, what am I watching? I feel like my mind is, like, opening up, you know.
But it doesn't have narration, and they're not humorous.
So no, yeah, but it's just, like, these crazy images. And, yeah, so that's what it reminds me of, like, with the obliteration of chickens for the style.
And for anybody who doesn't know, Werner Herzog like hates chickens. Is that the kind of the premise?
That came up. Did you see My Dinner with Werner? It's a short film.
Yeah, that one's great.
And they have a big moment with chickens, I feel like, in that.
He does talk about how he hates chickens, yeah.
So that also reminded me of your film a little bit. Yeah.
There's a third Werner Herzog short film out right now as well. I don't know, like, I think I was the first.
Yeah, I think
there's three of us. Yeah. It's His and Herzog, which is fucking great.
Oh, I haven't seen that
And it's so funny. Amy Simon stars in it. And she's an actor, writer, director as well. She just did She Dies Tomorrow.
Right.
And she's awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
I was actually able to visit the set when I was out there in December in LA.
Cool.
And she was filming all these macro shots in her garage and in her kitchen, and a lot of that was mixing whatever she had around, like oil, water, glitter, food coloring, fake blood. Like, I went and picked up some, like, you know, herbs and tree branches off the ground for her to some dirt thrown in there, and like, you'll see that in the images, like,
awesome,
here and there in the movies. Very strange film. But His and Herzog is also playing Charlotte Film Festival, which we're playing with as well. We are going to play the Charlotte Film Festival, which runs
September. Chickens is playing there?
Both The Obliteration of the Chickens and Disco Graveyard are playing Charlotte, which runs the 23rd to the 27th virtually.
Cool. Nice. I believe Darling Pet Monkey is also playing there.
Cool.
Oh, yeah.
I think
I pointed some special friends in that direction
awesome.
Of the
well,
festival, and that includes that film as well as His and Herzog. So.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Well, I can't wait to try to attend that one. Yeah. If we're allowed from here.
There's a lot of great looking genre stuff in there. It's going to be weird.
Awesome.
I'm excited to check that out. And Bria's film, 12 Hour Shift, is also playing that.
Nice.
And Disco and Chickens will also be playing Film Quest.
Nice.
And I think that's going to be the end of the month, but they haven't given us dates yet for anything. So cool. We'll see. what happens with that.
And for anybody who doesn't know, a lot of these festivals, they were in-person festivals, and now they're taking place in virtual environments, and they use various platforms for these things. But a lot of them are available to everyone. Some of the fests are geo-blocked to certain locations, so you have to be living, mm-hmm. You can only watch it if you live in a certain state or a certain region. So I don't know, I'm not sure what those festivals are doing, but everybody should go check out some of the programming. It really is like a great experience. And I've been pretty dedicated. I couldn't do it with Fantasia just because of the quantity, but I've been super dedicated to like trying to attend festivals and watch every single film that they have in the programming. So I've done that for a number of fests so far, and I'm going to continue that going forward as much as
I think it makes Michael feel like he's accomplishing something that has anything to do with the outside world, because we've been so locked down. Like, we've been taking this very seriously. So he's like in the Q&As and he feels like he has friends.
Yeah. It's almost like being a person.
Yeah.
Right. I miss festivals so much. You guys, I bought in December for this year's festival run, which of course did not happen, a gold suit, as well as abstract rainbow sequin booties, okay?
Awesome.
I was going to party the fuck up this year.
And they've just been sitting in the closet.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so sad.
Very sad.
Well, we will look forward to seeing those next festival season, next festival cycle.
But eventually, I'll do it.
In the meantime, though, you've got Obliteration of Chickens, which you talked about, and then Disco Graveyard, which is, would you call it like sort of a spiritual, I think we said it was a spiritual sequel, or you said that to me at some point. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's just, it's something that I had a busy executive job and I wasn't able to film anything narratively. And so I wanted to have something for the festival run this year. And I was encouraged by a lot of programmers like Abraham from Morbido and Landon from The Overlook and, Fright Fest, Paul McAvoy. Like a bunch of people told me, like, continue with this, keep experimenting. We love this. And I was so shocked. I mean, probably because it's like a huge departure from my usual narrative horror, social political horror films, but they really, went out and encouraged it. And thank you again for all your help with that, because I'm not an editor. I don't have the fucking patience, and technology's never been my friend. So
yeah, no, they're fun to work on and try to shape something that's the get your ideas down to whatever it's going to be.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Yeah, and that's just, it's just about like, living your fucking life for yourself before it's too late.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is. Memento mori, party it up, time to dance, be yourself, have fun. And then you and I, we also worked on that Nihilistic music video in the same style.
Yeah.
Stock footage.
Yeah. And I'll link that to Consider the Titanic. That was a fun one as well. So it's been cool to do those three films. And I think, one thing that's neat about them in terms of fest is I think a lot of times festival programmers want like something that's, I don't know if you call it like a memory eraser, or like a palate cleanser. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where it's like, they're programming a bunch of kind of more typical stuff. And then you want something that people are going to like, they're going to respond to, but also is going to just like clean the palate and allow them to like refresh themselves so that they can, absorb the subsequent stuff. So a lot of times, like in the middle of shorts blocks, they'll put in something that's pretty short. So these are, both these films, Disco Graveyard and Obliteration, are only a few minutes long, which I think is solid for what they are. That's the right length for what they are, but it means that it's easy to fit into a block. It gives people an experience of like having something fun in the middle of some other stuff that sometimes is fun and sometimes is not fun, and then they get like refreshed and excited to see more, I think, like from that,
right? Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it. And Disco in particular has been, for the blocks that it's been programmed to play, it's been usually programmed at the very beginning of a block.
Oh, cool, yeah.
Which is to set the tone.
Yeah.
So that's been interesting. Like, it'll play Boston Underground as part of Nightstream at some point in October with the Homegrown Horror block here. And
cool.
That's, that and Chattanooga, they both opened virtually, those blocks.
Nice.
Yeah, we also we worked on Shiny Diamonds in the Homegrown Horror Block as well.
Umbilicus is supposed to be. Is it in the Homegrown?
That's in the Comedy Block or whatever. Okay.
And Darling Pet Monkey is going to be
in the Comedy Block. Yeah.
But I'm excited for what they've put together, where they've gotten a whole bunch of festivals together to do a virtual experience, which includes Boston Underground, which is one of our all time favorite experiences.
Yeah, we were very sad because we were like had our tickets.
We had
a couple weeks out of coming to the East Coast.
It was supposed to be in March, and we had our plane tickets, and we were ready to go.
No, I'm so bummed out about everything. But yeah, Nightstream will be fun because that's not just Buff; it'll be Brooklyn Horror, North Bend, Popcorn Frights, and the Overlook. So five.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's like the Voltron of film festivals online.
Yeah,
that'll be an incredible experience for sure.
Yeah, I hope it's really special. And then coming up on Fantastic Fest, which I have zero work in, but the new features and events are going to be free, you guys.
Oh, wow.
For anyone in the U.S. So that'll be the 24th through October 1st.
Cool. Yeah, that's one we've never
been
to.
Check that out.
Yeah, it is really fun. Again, I already said it, but again, for anybody like sitting at home in the pandemic, wondering like how to connect with the world, attending these virtual fests can be a really fun time. And it's not even just the work. A lot of them are having like meetups and other kind of special, there was a live podcast at Horrible Imaginings, and they really encouraged everybody to get on the chat during all the Q&As and all the special events and just kind of talk with each other and ask questions. And they were like, we're not just going to wait till the end of the Q&A and allow audience questions. We want this to be like an engaged conversation on these films. And that was really nice. Like it made it feel like, oh, I'm here with my friends again, in this room and getting to have some kind of shared experience with people. So that's nice when my normal shared experience is with
just me,
Sophia, and a dog, that's not a complaint.
I mean,
that's not a complaint.
6 months of just me.
We're still hanging in there. That's okay.
Luckily, we got a dog. Let's just say that.
And so, do you have other films that are? I think is Rehome done with the festival run?
Ah, so Rehome still plays here and there. We shot that in October, early November of 2018 for the 2019 run festival wise, and it will at some point next year. I don't have an exact date. Probably spring. Play season 6 of the Etheria Collection on Amazon.
Right. Very cool. Yeah,
yeah. I wasn't sure if that was out yet. Yeah. Okay. So it's upcoming.
So
yeah. Season 1 is out, but season 2 will be coming out, and then they're sort of staggering them, but I don't have a date.
Right.
So for anybody who doesn't know about Etheria, it's a film festival that takes place. The base festival is here in Los Angeles, and then there's like often traveling or satellite versions of it in different places, and they play horror and sci-fi films directed by women, and it's always really high quality stuff, I would say.
Yeah, it's an awesome fest. Yeah. So yeah, so they're doing anthologies from like every year they've been around, I guess. Is that the focus of the anthology? So so like a little mixtape of films from the years. And then I think they're releasing them monthly. So like the first one that's out is like the oldest one, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm.
Right. You want to talk about what Rehome is about?
Yeah. So Rehome, and the side comes from living in this fucking country. Is inspired by the cruelty that we live under in this administration by putting, immigrants and children in cages, and it's fucking horrifying. And so Rehome is basically like a 5 minute into the future, Black Mirror-ish type of look into what that might be. Specifically, Gigi Salguero, who is an incredible director, is also an actor and voiceover artist, and she stars as a poor woman, very, very down on her luck, who rehomes her child to an institution because she's living on the street and has nothing and can no longer take care of this baby. And these rehome institutions, of course, are privatized and capitalized like everything else here in the U.S. And things don't go so well for these people. So let's say the downtrodden, they don't go so well for them because it's like capitalism, white supremacy, class warfare, and, you know, all that fun stuff.
All the stuff we love in our genre films, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Allegories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But no, I'm slightly biased, right, for having helped out on it, and Sophia was the cinematographer on it. But no, I thought it was a really
Cool well, it's movie. So
really
timely.
Turned out really well, yeah.
So I think that's really great, is to make a statement in the moment that it's happening. And now even, like, we've seemed to have forgotten there's a bunch of kids in cages still on the border. Like, we still need to deal with that. Yeah. So,
well, it's because, like, there's a new nightmare every fucking hour.
Yes, for
like,
sure.
Like, nobody can possibly keep up with the trauma.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's shameful, to say the least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
for sure. So, yeah, so that's an important one, for sure. So I'm excited when that comes out.
Yeah, yeah, we'll definitely spread the word when
that's
out.
For everybody to watch. Yeah.
And then probably a lot of your other stuff is available for people to watch currently, right? You said My Monster is available on Alter.
My Monster and Rites of Vengeance are both on the Alter YouTube channel.
And we didn't work on either of those, but that's okay. That was I think one of them you shot after we moved.
And the other one was before we moved.
No. The other one was shot here, but we were out of town or something.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
So, yeah. It's okay. I mean, you don't, not that you're obligated to always work with us.
We like it.
We like it when it happens, but we still are happy to support and love the movies when we are not involved as well. So.
Well, I love working with you guys too. I miss you so much.
Yeah. Well, we hope that this will all end and we can all make things together again sometime.
Yeah. I feel like my stuff is growing moss.
But yeah, sorry, I interrupted. What other your other films that are available for people to watch?
Yeah, Innsmouth used to be on Shudder.
Oh, yeah.
The contract ran out. So that doesn't currently have a home. For a Good Time Call is in the SheVenge anthology on Amazon, too.
Innsmouth was, somebody saw Innsmouth and saw me in it. So I play like a dead body in Innsmouth on Shudder, and they like messaged me. I forget who it was, but I was like, oh yeah, that's like, it was just so random for them to like just see me on the floor, I think. Because it was like they randomly watched it. I forget who it was that messaged me about that, but that was pretty funny to be like, oh yeah, I guess I show up in that.
Yeah.
Well, there's one more thing, Salem Horror Fest, which is also going online in October because of course. Another thing that I do is I write short stories, and I've been published in a couple of anthologies and a magazine. And there will be a bunch of authors doing some campfire tales type readings just virtually online. And so I'm reading excerpts from two short stories, one that I had in a Pizza Horror anthology called Demons of 1994, and the other I co-wrote with Casey Lansdale, who starred in Postpartum and... it's also in Rehome in a supporting role. Her and I co-wrote a story about sex, death, in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Cool. Right.
Yeah. So
we'll check that out.
Read some excerpts for that, so you can find that. And I can also send you a link to the Amazon page
where
those can be found.
Yeah. Definitely do.
That'll be fun. Yeah, Rehome played there last year. And that was fun. I was able to attend. But this year, of course, like everything else, is going to be online. So like October 1st through, I don't know, it's like a week or two. They've got stuff. Like they've got Joe Dante, like a special guest. I don't know like exactly what they're doing there and how that will work. But there's a whole bunch of really cool panels and I don't know if to say classes, but like lectures on like, say, you know, social political horror or the Witches of Hollywood. I'm looking at their website now.
Cool.
And it looks really cool. So
yeah, we'll definitely check that out. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like there's all these virtual fests and virtual events that I think people are really stepping up and doing cool stuff at the, you know, this time since we're all, or most of us who are behaving are mostly stuck at home.
Oh my god, yeah, don't even get me started. But it's also nice because like October is such a crunch time for horror festivals, and like we all love horror all year round, so like, you know, there could be other months that we take over, but October is always like a glut of the horror film festivals, and you can only choose to go to like four or whatever, you know. So it's nice to be able to be like sit on my couch and be like, all right, I'll check out Salem today, and I'll check out Boston Underground today, and like whatever is happening, I can just drop in. So that is like the one plus I think from them going online is like I can actually now attend more.
Yeah, we don't have to pay to travel. We don't have to pay to travel to some of these fests.
Well, and also they all like would overlap, and I'll be like, well, my film's at this one, so I'll go to this one, and then I'm going to miss this other one that I love. And, you know, it's always like, you know, a Sophie's Choice of film festivals.
Literally Sophie's Choice. Yes.
Literally and figuratively.
For sure.
Very cool. Cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and it was really great to see you in quotes, and talk to you. And we look forward to the day we are back in the same room, being able to do this. But we appreciate your time and your discussing all the strange movies we've been watching and
yes,
all the strange things we've been making. So thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Hell yeah, man.